Funding for the connection is made possible by the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. We're going to town on vegetables this hour with the hottest chef in America. And if you don't believe it, just ask him. Charlie Trotter is not a vegetarian, but he talks about veggies the way some men talk about some women and vice versa. Shape, textures, flavors. Vegetables are just more interesting than meat or fish in their possibilities, he says, and in the things you can do with them. And different things he does, says a customer who has dined at Charlie Trotter's restaurant in Chicago more than 300 times and never had the same meal twice. The chef's philosophy is, if it ain't broke, break it. Charlie Trotter was named himself for the jazz immortal Charlie Parker. He didn't go to cooking school. His major was political science. He didn't start cooking till he was 23, but then it quickly became an obsession. In the kitchen, he has been called the mad scientist, the tough love drill sergeant, the perfectionist workaholic. He calls himself a sensualist who feels his way in food. His most kindred spirit, he says, is Miles Davis, who used to say, "I'll play it first and tell you what it is later." Connection listeners, the groundhog says we've got 6 weeks of winter to go. What are the vegetables that'll get you through to spring peas? Do you plant your best stuff, or can you find it in your Safeway? And how do you make it tastier than a lamb chop? 1-800-423-8255 makes the Charlie Trotter connection, or 1-800-423-TALK, or you can join us online at theconnection.org. Charlie Trotter, welcome to The Connection. We love chefs who bring their wares. They don't like us to chew on air, but I don't know how long we're going to be able to resist this stuff. What have we got?
Well, we brought a sampling today of typical items that could be found in our vegetable tasting menu. So.
Typical little items here. They look much too beautiful to eat.
Well, the idea is to really obtain the finest, purest product, organic product primarily, and to just have the foodstuffs really taste like they are. So things are actually cooked oftentimes in their own juices. We may juice carrots and then braise carrots in carrot juice. Juice celery, braise the celery in its own juice, which just magnifies the flavor.
Step one back. I want to do that. Cooking juice in carrot juice, starting with a blender?
Well, we would, for example, take fennel, or we could take leeks, and we would juice the vegetables and then slowly braise or slowly...
Juice the vegetables, meaning...
With a standard vegetable juicer.
Okay.
Or a food processor could be used.
Okay.
And then we would go ahead and cook, braise the vegetables in literally their own juice. So rather than cook them in water or stock where the flavor is sort of dissipating into the liquid, in this case we have the flavor being compounded into the vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
So light and delicate, but simultaneously explosive is the goal.
Light, delicate, and simultaneously explosive. What do we have here?
Well, here's a terrine. This is how we might start the meal. This is featuring several root vegetables, sunchoke, some organic carrots, some radishes. And what we do is take a vegetable stock and use a little bit of a seaweed jelly that we dissolve into the vegetable stock, and then we dip the vegetables into the jelly and lay them into a terrine mold and barely press them together. So they're just held together, and there's a puree of parsley root on the plate. So great mouthfeel from the parsley root puree. Gives us something like a cream sauce without using any cream or butter. So, in fact, this is not only vegetarian food here, but this is vegan food. There's not an ounce of cream or butter used for any of this.
Who's going to test it?
I suppose.
Yeah, you better do it.
I already know what it tastes like, but I'm...
Is this a one-off? I mean, did this occur to you, the idea of, you know, parsley root combined with carrots and...
I think, well, in this case, we're putting together a menu, and so we want to be very careful that we're not going to repeat flavors, textures, and so we conceive of a dish in relation to every other dish. So we start with something like this, it sets a tone, it's light, and then we begin to build in flavors. I think it's important to put together things that people find recognizable, that aren't shockingly different, but at the same time, maybe they're put together in a way they've not quite tasted or seen before.
But when did this particular combination spring into mind?
I would say 2 weeks ago, we had a mushroom terrine on the menu, and I was saying, we should do something now with these root vegetables. Let's get them in. Let's cook them all separately in their own juices. Let's make the jelly, and then let's go ahead and bind them and put them in a terrine. And how will we flavor this? Well, just a drizzle of olive oil and maybe a touch of this this parsley root puree. And so it just sort of evolves. Now, this might appear on tonight's menu at the restaurant, and then tomorrow we may make it three types of radishes and two types of turnip. And omit the carrot and omit some of the other things. And then the next day, rather than wrapping it in the cabbage, we might wrap it in Swiss chard or wrap it in mustard greens. And so it's not a fixed idea. The idea can change day to day to day to day. So if we monitor this dish over 2 weeks, each day to the next day, it might not seem like it's changing dramatically. But if you look at the dish today and look at it 2 weeks from now, they're going to be two very different things.
This is a challenge, and I'm not quite ready for it.
Over here is fennel confit, fennel cooked very slowly in olive oil for hours and hours until it's meltingly soft. And then the pieces of fennel are placed in the oven to apply heat to have the olive oil sort of come out from the fennel bulb so that it's not overly saturated with the oil. Mm-hmm. And here it's being served with something a little bit unorthodox, a mole sauce that is made by taking a couple of peppers and some apple and some nuts and some chocolate and blending them together. So,
fennel confit. Confit, I'm just learning in my old age, it really is a kind of deep, slow cooking in oil.
Confit originally was used
as
a preserving technique, but these days, since we don't really have to preserve things like that, we use it more as a cooking technique to gain absolute succulence.
Absolute succulence, okay. We're looking at kind of symphony in reds, oranges, and yellows. Next.
Well, over here it's rutabaga and three types of organic carrots, white carrots, orange carrots, and some purple carrots, with a red wine, red cabbage sauce. That would actually be sort of the concluding dish on this menu because the flavors are a little bit more robust, and the red wine, red cabbage sauce will help us make this dish red wine friendly, which is something we're concerned with vegetable preparations.
We're learning about all kinds of colors of vegetables that we thought were, you know, white radishes at the core and can be very different things, parsnips, turnips, particularly the root vegetables. How does this happen? How do you shop for this stuff?
Well, deliberately today, I decided to stay away from the exotic mushrooms and the luxury products like truffles and things. And really, everything here is made with everyday kinds of ingredients that can be found at a typical supermarket, not even a specialty gourmet store. So leeks, different root vegetables, fennel, some salsify. That might be a little harder to find. The turnips and parsnips and rutabaga over here. So we can find these things at a typical store. It's just how we approach them, how we put them together.
And yet you at the high end shopping becomes a very big part of the game, does it not?
Well, it's the most important thing we do is cultivate the relationships with the folks that supply us with the product. We have 95 different farmers, growers, purveyors, fishermen, all over the country and in some in Europe. And in some cases, one guy has the only organic hazelnut farm in the country. And you have to commit to a certain quantity of hazelnuts every month for the whole year. They're all harvested in the fall. They're kept in their shell in the barn. And every month, they'll shell out the 20 or 30 pounds that you want, and they come to you.
Hmm.
Another guy, you know, he's got these small little lettuces that he raises, and that's it. And you work with people, and they work with you, and that's how you get these things.
This has become part of the modern game in cooking, is sort of having the ultimate lettuce farm at your beck and call. But in a certain way, everybody can play this game on the internet now, right?
Well, stuff is so much more accessible today than it was even 5 years ago. And you know, the more demand that we place for these things, you know, it wasn't so long ago that we would only find 40 things in the produce section of a typical supermarket in the wintertime. These days, even an average everyday supermarket would have 85, 95 things in the produce, the fresh section, in the winter months. I mean, this is astonishing.
Go back to the beginning. Why vegetables? Why does a man with infinite imagination and resources like yours focus on veggies?
Well, at the restaurant, which has been open now for about 13 and a half years, almost the entirety of that time, we have offered an 8-course vegetable tasting menu that approximately a third of our clients order. I've always found the cooking of vegetables to be much more exciting than cooking meat or fish. And the possibilities of flavor and texture are infinitely broader than sort of the unidimensional textures of meat and fish and unidimensional flavors. A big piece of meat, what's that? I'd rather have something much smaller and then augment the dish with four or five or six types of vegetables.
You made me think of the heartiest meal I've ever had was Gordon Hammersley's all-veggie winter pie, especially the parsnips, carrots, sweet root vegetables, meatiest dish on the menu, and of course there was no meat in it. What is that trick of making you feel that you've had all the sort of guilty pleasure of red meat and in fact not a bit of it was on the plate? Making it feel as good as that first bite of lamb fat on a chop.
I think one of the problems that we often have with vegetarian dishes is frequently people that cook vegetarian food are maybe more interested in their political agenda than they are in what the food is. And if we approach the food with the same care that we approach cooking meat or fish or pastry items, it doesn't become an issue. We don't think of it in terms of being vegetarian or vegetable. It's food the way we'd cook any other food, the same care, the same relationship to the ingredients and the seasoning. And you know, I'm looking at these dishes and talking to you, and it's hard for me to concentrate on you because I'm obsessing with how the salt is just glistening here and the juices from the leeks are coming out. I mean, it just makes you want to eat the thing. I mean, that's what food should do. You should just want to salivate.
I don't know how long we're going to be able to resist it, but give it a couple of minutes. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Charlie Trotter vegetable connection. Mizrak is on the line.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Mizrak, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome.
I'm the co-owner of the Ethiopian restaurant in the South End, Boston. We do have a large selection of vegetarian. As a result of the Ethiopian Coptic Orthodox Church, the vegetarian are cooked vegan, and some of the traditional vegetables we cook is collard green, cabbage, lentils, and split pea. Sometimes it's hard, the collard green, to flavor them because we don't put anything much except like garlic and ginger. Do you have any additional flavor for collard green?
Well, collard greens I love, and we use those frequently at the restaurant. Any sort of sharp or bitter green is best slowly cooked and using some kind of fat. In this case, if we want to avoid bacon fat or meat fat, we would use olive oil. And I love the accent of ginger or a type of spice or herb to kind of make it pop a little bit. Possibly you would even slowly cook it and make a sweet sour effect. Sherry wine vinegar, a touch of brown sugar, ginger at the end, and then we might even add a little bit of roasted garlic at the very end that we fold into it. And then we have very complex flavor.
Mizrak, can you work with the vegetable juices that you're talking about? I mean, do you ever cook collard greens in a kind of liquefied collard greens themselves?
No, we usually cook with just water, olive oil, or vegetable oil, and we use fresh ginger, garlic, and onions. We don't use any juices or no sugar at all. And as I said, it's vegan. We do have a lot of vegetarian.
And we love it, Mizrak. I just wondered, Charlie, do you do the lentil thing?
Oh, we have all sorts of legumes and lentils, you know, things on the menu, yes.
We'll do more vegetables when we come back. Charlie Trotter of the famous Charlie Trotter's restaurant, sort of the house chef at the New York Times for a while, too, is our guest. We're talking vegetables this hour. Give them a call at 1-800-423-8255. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Christopher Light, and this is The Connection. We're talking with Charlie Trotter of Charlie Trotter's famous Chicago restaurant and the many cookbooks about vegetables. 1-800-423-8255. It requires a certain different kind of thinking, and the radish I'm just swallowing is making me do it. You have to think differently about the broccoli category, the spinach category. Do I really have to finish it? That kind of stuff. How much thinking does it take to appreciate what you put into that?
Well, if this food is to be successful, it shouldn't require over-analyzation, either on the part of me putting it together or someone consuming it. You shouldn't have to think and contemplate every little thing. I mean, this should be a very natural...
No, but I am thinking about the fact that this is sort of veggies in their own essence. This is not a chicken stock or a lamb stock or a veal stock or anything else that sort of brought out those flavors. It's the thing itself.
Well, I mean, think of the possibilities, the repertoire of vegetables that we can work with. Our vegetable cookbook uses over 400 different vegetable and grain and legume foodstuffs. Meat and fish, yes, beef tastes different than pigeon and different from duck, but it's a much more limited range, and same with seafood. And so we can really expand the palate in terms of textures and flavors and everything else by using vegetable elements, not just for vegetarian dishes, but as support items for meat and fish.
Connection listeners, my palate is expanding as we speak. Give them a call at 1-800-423-8255. Better flavors on the radio, as we say. Kurt is on the line.
Hey, Charlie. This is Kurt Cuss from Lake Forest, Illinois. I work with you and Norman Van Aken at Sinclair's.
Right, right.
You work with Charlie Trotter and live to tell about it.
Well,
it's not easy, I'm told.
Gone blind afterward, but anyway, the question has to do with what changed your mind from political sciences to cooking, and who were some of the initial influences over your passion for food?
Well, the food was so bad at the University of Wisconsin that food was all I thought about. So I began to cook for my roommates, and one thing led to another. I used to cook from Craig Claiborne's New York Times cookbook and Julia Child's books and James Beard's American Cookery. But back then, at the age of 19, 20, tells you how much I knew about cooking and food. I really thought that a recipe was a lot like a math problem, and that is you couldn't deviate at all. Or else the thing wouldn't work. It wouldn't be a successful dish. And 4 months of cooking that way, almost every day, I went the other way. And to this day, it would be difficult for me to follow a recipe. I would want to deviate too much. So it was a love of eating and flavors and the pleasures of the table, and I just sort of pursued it.
The recipes are merely suggestions.
That's all they are. They're giving you an idea to maybe do something your own way.
Yep.
Kurt, I want to know what it's like to work with Charlie Trotter.
Well, it was interesting. It seemed like he was starting down the path at that point, and he and I worked together in, oddly enough, the salad prep station, and we're putting together all kinds of combinations of things under the tutelage of Norman Van Aken, who instituted my real passion for food, too, and always pushed for varying combinations and trying things that were way outside of the box, at least at that point in time. I find it interesting that many of the things that come around now were things we were playing with at that time. And his interest in trying anything that came along was fascinating.
Kurt, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. The Charlie Trotter and the Vegetable Connection. You can join us online at theconnection.org. Jim is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Jim. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. My name's Jim Ward, and I'm a farmer from Sharon, Massachusetts. My brother and I farm here, and I thought I'd check in and talk about vegetables.
Let's talk about them. What do you grow, for example?
Well, we grow a lot of different vegetables and small fruit. We try to grow some funky ones that you won't find in the grocery store. We focus on letting them get fully ripe on the plant and delivering them to local restaurants and selling them at our farm stand.
What would you like to sell to Charlie Trotter?
Well, heirloom tomatoes, I guess, would be our passion, or tomatoes in general, not just heirlooms. But we grow many kinds, 30 or 40 kinds of tomatoes, and I think.
Well, we'd be very interested. I'd love to see your tomatoes. From mid-August through September, we typically offer an all-tomato menu, 8, 9, 10 courses featuring 15 different varieties of heirloom tomatoes. So I'm always looking for new possibilities and new sources.
All tomatoes all the time, seriously.
That's right.
Nothing.
Dessert as well.
Let's go through the menu. And Jim, take notes. I mean, this could be...
Well, we might start with a little amuse-bouche, a little thing with four or five small tomatoes that have been peeled and seeded, and each sort of stuffed with a different pickled vegetable, maybe pickled green eggplant in one, maybe pickled cucumbers in another. And these would be all little bite-sized things just to kind of get your juices going. Then we might serve a tomato tureen, layers of four or five different types of heirloom tomatoes alternating with each other, roughly the way we make a tureen like the one that's sitting in front of us, where it's held together with a natural a jelly, maybe tomato water into which we've dissolved some seaweed to bind the tomato pieces together. Maybe serve it with a broken tomato vinaigrette sauce. Then we might move on to...
How do you break a tomato?
You drop it from about 3 feet. No, we might just really coarsely chop it up and then just whisk it together at the last moment and let the little flecks of mm-hmm. Tomato kind of be part of the plate. Then we might serve a puree of tomato soup with some tortellinis that could be filled with bitter arugula, arugula with a sweetness but a sharpness. And from there, we could move on to a duet of grains, each one flavored with maybe we would move into different mushroom elements with the grains, but then use a very complicated sauce, tomato sauce, for the plate, reducing mushroom stock into the tomato sauce and then having some small pieces of tomato confit around the edges. So we're beginning to move into a red wine-friendly tomato dish. Then maybe a more substantial red wine tomato dish. We might make a red wine tomato sauce and just serve... several types of whole roasted tomatoes that we literally treat like pieces of meat, where we baste them with, we might even baste them with animal fat, maybe duck fat, but if we want to keep it strictly vegetarian, we would baste them with olive oil and herbs and things like that, and they would sit on this red wine tomato sauce, and then we would just conclude with some small sweet dessert items made with tomato.
That's 8 or 10. Anyway, Jim, what would you add to that? But I also introduce us sort of to the heirloom cult. This is sort of pre-hybrid, old-fashioned tomato strains. How many were there? How many are there going to be?
Well, I'm sure there are probably hundreds. You'll see 30 to 50 in a lot of seed catalogs. I think the definition of heirloom is, in my mind, a little more broad than... I try not to exclude all hybrids. My father grew early girl tomatoes, and I consider them fantastic tasting, I remember eating those in his garden as a kid with the field heat still in them. They're warm off the plant, and I've rarely had a tomato experience like that. And so I grow it, and I include it as an heirloom in my mix. It's probably the only hybrid we do that with, but it just deserves to be there. And you won't ever find it in the produce markets because it doesn't reach a size or a durability that would make it acceptable to the long chain of distribution. So,
Jim, thank you. I wish you'd send Charlie Trotter your card, tell him you met him on the connection, and send us your card too. Thank you. 1-800-423-8255. The Veggie Connection with Charlie Trotter from Chicago. Tim is on the line from Granby, Connecticut.
Good morning. Great show. Great topic.
Thank you, Tim.
Hey, Charlie, question for you. I travel quite a bit, and although at home we're very focused on mostly eating vegetables and cooking vegetables and stay away from meat as much as we can, the challenge being on the road is finding vegetarian restaurants or restaurants that do a good job with vegetables as I crisscross the country here. Being a restaurant insider, do you see what you're doing as a trend? Do you see that there is growth in this, and in hopes that I will be able to see more restaurants out there that offer this type of cuisine?
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, for the best, I'm going to anger many people right now, but for the best vegetable food that you can get, stay away from vegetarian restaurants for the most part. There may be a couple of exceptions, but their agenda is different. They have a political cause that they're more interested in than, let's say, food and the aesthetics of what the food can be. That being said, the best chefs in America also typically can make the best vegetable dishes. And right now, all the best restaurants and the best chefs offer some sort of really fantastic vegetable alternative, whether it's a full tasting menu, as you would find at Danielle or John George or Emeril's or a number of other places, or whether it's just vegetable dishes that are on the menu. And so go to the regarded restaurants and express your enthusiasm, and the best restaurants would want to take care of you.
Tim, I'm sure they will. 1-800-423-8255. Can I just slip in a question here? You mentioned food aesthetics. It's a big part of the Trotter thing, veggies or otherwise. The look, the glamorous, the, dare I say, you know, almost erotic presentation of this stuff. How do you figure that out, and how important is it?
Well, food is beautiful in and of itself, and if you let it be what it can be, if I take this fennel bulb and slowly cook it in olive oil and then roast it a little bit and just cut it open and smear some of this mole sauce on the plate, I mean, I don't have to do anything to... That's beautiful in itself to me. I don't think we want to ever overly play with the food. We want to be very quick when we put it on a plate, and you see the color of a puree of the herb and a puree of the red burgundy carrot and the juices that came off the leeks as they came out of the braising liquid. What's more beautiful than that? I mean, to me, you know, food, I think, is the only sensual pleasure that we all indulge in 6, 7, 8 times a day. And every single day of our lives. And with the littlest bit of effort, it is so much more than mere sustenance. I mean, we can really achieve something that I think is on a higher level.
1-800-423-8255. The Charlie Trotter Connection. Renee is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Renee. Welcome.
Hello, Renee.
Hi, this is Renee Michelena. I have a restaurant in Cambridge called Centro, and I used to work with Charlie Trotter in Chicago and Vegas for several years. And working with him has been a most amazing, most challenging kitchen, I think, that I've ever worked with in 12 years I've been working. And I'm just really glad that he's around and he's still pushing the levels of cuisine that I've been trying to expose people to. So.
Renee, what's the trick? We talked about working with Charlie Trotter, but quite seriously, I mean, the moral seems to be change. Do it different. Push the limit. Something new every day. As he says, you know, if it ain't broke, break it. how do you keep up with that?
Well, obviously, I mean, you kind of go around and see what everybody else is doing. But the beauty about Charlie is working there and working with him was that he basically has, you know, spares no expense for everything, and he definitely pushes everybody to a level that they would never even conceive of. I mean, they just kind of huge kitchen there, and there's a lot of people there working, but they kind of just compete against each other and make you do better and think of things in a different way. It's almost like if you're in a think tank or something like that, everybody just kind of plays off each other and make you do better.
Well, I will say that we've had some very, very talented people come through our kitchen over the many years, and Renee stands out as one of the truly great sensual talents. Renee was a person that really never – his own palate is so refined and distinct that he knows how to make food really sing. Boston is very lucky to have Renee cooking here and working here in this city because he's an amazing talent.
Renee, I'm tickled you called. 1-800-423-8255. Rob is on the line.
Hi, Charlie. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Great, great. Sounds like you're doing really exciting stuff, and I'm really excited to hear about all the vegetable dishes you're making. The question that I had was that I had to take issue with your comment you made a few minutes ago about the best chefs always understand vegetables and vegetarian food. My experience as a vegetarian and that of many others has been that a lot of very fancy restaurants often don't get vegetarian stuff. They don't think it's really high cuisine, you know, very fancy gourmet stuff, and they'll serve, you know, some side dishes, some steamed carrots, or they'll serve, you know, some sort of very fancy vegetarian tart or something that is kind of oily and greasy. And I'm really excited that you're doing this, but do you really think most great chefs really understand vegetables?
Well, I think that most great chefs really understand cooking and flavor and how to coax flavor from foodstuffs. I know what you're saying. I think my experience has been these days, as in the last 5, 8, 10 years, we are finding chefs and even the fine dining restaurants putting more time and more care into the vegetable dishes and offering significant vegetable alternatives, if not outright vegetable menus. I think it was prior to that, maybe following the French paradigm of, well, vegetarians, and we'll just take the fish off of the dish and serve you the...
Exactly.
And I think we're seeing less of that, and we're seeing more of, you know, you can have an amazing vegetable menu at the French Laundry, for example, with Thomas Keller.
And you think that's a... Is that a cultural thing with the healthy foods being more in vogue or fresher foods being
health,
available?
Health is, to me, a pretty boring issue. I'd rather pursue flavor, and health will take care of itself.
Rob, interesting. 1-800-423-TALK. Jenny is on the line.
Yes, hi. I'm calling from Wellesley, Massachusetts, and I'm enjoying the show as I'm running down the road here. My question basically involves the average person that has about 45 minutes to make dinner in the evening. I have children and quite a busy life, and can't really spend the time to do to juice the vegetables, to do the slow cooking.
Just take the kids down to Blue Ginger and ask for Ming Tsai.
But we can't ever get in there. It's too crowded. So
no, you're speaking for a million average moms, Jenny, and I'm glad you put the question.
No, that is a great question, and you know, I'm not saying this is how we cook at home for the family. I'm saying this is a way we can do it, and it's exciting. You know, I think great techniques for vegetables for home, for dinner for the family after a hard day's work. Try some techniques that you might use for cooking a piece of meat. Take, for example, a whole head of cauliflower and cut it in half or quarter it and drizzle some olive oil on top and maybe a little coriander, a little cumin, and splash some water in the pan and put it in the oven and treat it like you're roasting meat. And you'll be amazed at how concentrated and complex the flavor is rather than you breaking the cauliflower florets off, plunging them into boiling salted water, taking them out, and now you've got to put some heavy dressing on them or makes it, and it's just not very pleasant. I think it would be better if you try braising or roasting vegetables, and that's very complex.
Jenny, do it and invite us over. It sounds interesting. Are you doing this for moms out there as well? It's gotten awfully high end, this game, hasn't it?
Am I doing?
Well, I mean, can everybody do it? Are you liberating all of us, or just the pros?
Well, there are two things. There's a dining experience in a restaurant, which involves lots of things. Then there's cooking at home on a daily basis for the family. And yes, a lot of these techniques are absolutely doable for the home cook. We have a new book, Charlie Trotter Cooks at Home, and it's very simple, accessible recipes. Many of them are vegetable recipes.
Jenny, I want to know how it comes out in your house. Let us know. We're talking vegetables with the great Charlie Trotter. 1-800-423-8255 makes the connection. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Charlie Trotter's Vegetables Connection. Miles Davis's You're My Everything reminds me, I wanted to ask you about the music and the jazz connection, Charlie Trotter.
Well, I think that cooking is very, very similar to making music in that you don't just invent things. You have to have a structure and an understanding, and you have to understand a precedent. And then from there, you're in a position possibly to improvise. I use Miles Davis as an example because maybe the ultimate improviser. He never really played Stella by Starlight the same way twice. He would play it, and then they would play it again, and he might pick up the tempo, and then they'd play it again, and he might emphasize the alto saxophone, and then they'd play it again, and he might put a mute on his horn. And 2 years later, it would sound like a completely different thing. And food is the exact same way. I don't see how one could just take this standard recipe and stamp it out over and over. This dish has to be made differently every single time. I'm going to taste it, adjust the seasoning. I'm going to tweak the acid that's in the sauce. I'm going to add more of the juice. I'm going to add more olive oil. That doesn't even take into account what we're going to do with the wine. A guest may come in and say, I'm having this steely Chablis, and we'll adjust. We'll adjust it from there.
I've noticed that your cookbooks are, at least one of them is organized by wine more than the food.
Yes. Seafood book is broken down by wine varietal type. So if you want to have a Viognier or a Sauvignon Blanc, you go to that chapter, and the dishes in the chapter are suited to that wine type.
1-800-423-8255. We're way out there, Connection fans, in the cooking department. Give Charlie Trotter a call at 1-800-423-TALK. Jim is on the line.
Good morning, Chris. Good morning, Charlie.
Welcome. Hello. Jim.
My name is Jim Wilker. I actually own a company called Specialty Foods Boston. We sell many of the specialty ingredients that Charlie features in his restaurant and his books to restaurants.
I've heard of your stuff, Jim. Glad you called.
Thank you. Like Charlie, a lot of what we do is about finding interesting and unusual ingredients for customers that are beautiful and pure and flavorful. And Charlie has access, and I have access, to some wonderful produce from small farms. But what I want to talk about is how I think that a lot of the, while the selection of produce that's available to the consumer has grown in quantity and in the number of things available, I think that the quality and flavor of a lot of things that you find in the supermarket gets a little bit worse every season. And I'm sure that everyone's
had... What are you thinking about, for example?
Well, I'm sure everyone's had the experience of going to the supermarket and seeing a beautiful basket of great-looking, beautiful strawberries and taking them home and finding that they taste like cardboard.
Right.
And I want to just...
Some of those bionic green peppers worry me, too.
Or the peaches, or even the carrots, for that matter. And I think that the supermarket industry and the scientists have really sort of co-opted the produce industry to the point where everything is very homogenized, and the emphasis is on appearance and shelf life and yield at the expense of flavor. And I think that Charlie and chefs of his caliber who seek out produce that has great flavor and history, and who work closely with farmers and small growers and encourage them, are so important, because they're what keeps these farmers growing these older and heirloom varieties that have that wonderful flavor and sort of connect us to the past and the history of the food.
Jim, how do the non-Charlies among us find that stuff and keep finding it?
Probably the only way in our area is to frequent the farmer's market and buy as much as you can and let the grower make money so that he'll keep doing it. A lot of times, I have customers who will say to me when I offer them a local item or an heirloom item, well, can I get a better price? And I'll say, you can't get a better price, because if I don't pay the farmer enough money for him to make a profit, he won't grow it anymore. And then you won't be able to have these peaches anymore.
You know, these are the guys that tend to the land, and we have to tend to them a little bit. And I know what you're saying with, we're not rotating crops like we used to, and things are losing nutrient value, and things are becoming blander and blander. But at the same time, there are some supermarkets that are making an effort, possibly not with everything that they have. I'm saying that their big mistake is trying to offer strawberries all throughout the year and trying to offer things that are not in season throughout the year. But you can still find stuff that you couldn't find years ago, and it makes it easier for the home cook. But with effort, you know, you can also go into certain ethnic neighborhoods. You can go to Chinatown in your city. You can go to a Greek neighborhood in Chicago, whatever it might be, and you can find stuff that you might not find in the mainstream supermarket, and some really great stuff, too.
Jim, thank you. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Charlie Trotter connection. Steve is on the line.
Hi, Charlie. This is Steve, right here in Boston.
Hey, how you doing?
And I'm just listening to the show today, and listening to Charlie talk about food is exciting. You can hear the incredible passion, dedication coming through. You can imagine what eating his food is like.
Have you done it, Steve?
Well, let's just put it this way. I spend most of my time trying to figure any way I can to get to Chicago just so I can get to the restaurant. So I'd say I've probably been there maybe 150 times or so. So I wanted to thank him. I was at the dinner last night.
Thank the guy who approves your expense account.
Well, I don't know about that, but... it's great that he came to Boston last night and prepared a meal at Cleo, which was pretty amazing.
Just give us a sort of a rough summary of 100 meals at Charlie Trotter's restaurant.
Well, the reason I keep
steak and fries every time, right?
Every time I go, the thing that's amazing is I've never had the same dish repeated once during that whole time.
Come on.
My first meal was in 1990, and... never seen, well, you could just see here, just having him talk about the food, he's just creating a dish just on the fly. You mention a vegetable or something, and then all of a sudden there's a dish. And without a doubt, I can say that, you know, the thing is, I thought, how does he keep track of all these dishes? And how could he not serve the same dish twice? And I think it's really the progression in his attitude and new foodstuffs and his philosophy of always trying to just improve and changing, that I think he's always just doing new dishes. So it's pretty remarkable.
Steve,
that's not quite how I wrote that. You're deviating a little.
Right. But also the restaurant, to me, I mean, I will go anywhere for a great meal, and you know, I've been to the great restaurants in Europe. I've never seen anything like what Charlie's doing, even in Europe, in terms of the dedication to the total dining experience, and that includes service. My pet peeve now is wine glasses. Most restaurants don't know how to properly wash them and polish them. There's maybe kind of a residue and from the dishwashing detergent. You don't have to think. I mean,
Steve,
the reason
let me ask, Steve, are we getting too fussy?
Are we getting too fussy?
Yeah.
Well, I think no, because I think if you do it right, you know, it's the only way to do it is really the right way. And you know, if you pour a wine into a glass that's not properly clean, no matter how great the effort it was that went into that wine in terms of producing it and storing it properly, it's just going to not show well. It's not going to be good.
You can just close your eyes, Steve.
What was that?
I mean, you can just close your eyes.
Well, to me, that's the beautiful thing is the reason I get out to Chicago as much as I can is that's my job, is just getting to the restaurant. And then once I get there, I just let them make the decisions. And so whether it's the proper wine for the dish or if I want a particular wine and, you know, they have the sommelier who knows how to deal with it, and the kitchen will adjust the dish, you know, and I don't even order. I just, you know, let Charlie cook. And so it's just if you're into food, you hear the passion. I mean, I'm getting hungry just listening to Charlie today.
Steve, you're a lucky man, and thanks for calling The Connection. 1-800-423-TALK. Debbie is on the line.
Yes.
Welcome,
well,
Debbie.
Yes. I'm calling on a cell phone. I hope you can hear me okay.
Just fine, Debbie.
Charlie's inspired me for 10 years. I have all his cookbooks, and he continually inspires me in the kitchen. And I have had the opportunity to dine at his restaurant. But for Christmas, I got a stovetop smoker for my home that we have absolutely loved. And I wonder what suggestions Charlie might have about how I should get started with vegetables in there. We love vegetables in my house. I don't have to get too creative with them.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want to use the smoker for vegetables, tomatoes end up working fantastically with the smoker. They pick up the flavor. They don't become too strong. Mushrooms work well with a smoker. You could put garlic. Onions are great in a smoker as well. So those are a few things. Can I mention one thing?
Please.
Our brand new 26 parts of our PBS show begin this Saturday. And in Boston, I believe your time slot is 2 or 2:30 on the PBS station. But what we do with the show is we film live, black and white, documentary-like footage in the restaurant space. And then we, after 4 or 5 minutes of seeing a lot of intensity and a dish that you could never make at home, basically, we segue into our studio kitchen, which is right next door, and we make a greatly simplified home cooking version of the dish. So we're showing you what goes on, how involved it is, 20 chefs running around. This dish is in this form, but now we're doing it in an everyday way. And I think viewers might pick up some ideas how to translate from a high-end restaurant to a home setting by watching the kitchen sessions on PBS.
Well, they better. 1-800-423-8255 is the connection phone. Diane is listening online from Chicago.
Hello, Chef Trotter.
Hello.
I just wanted to, first of all, congratulate you on your Mondavi Award of Culinary Excellence I heard about.
Oh, thanks very much.
Fabulous. A friend of mine from Boston just called in to tell me that you're on. She also told me she was at a lunch there and that you talked about shucking fresh scallops.
Yes.
In the morning before you were serving them.
Yes.
That's fascinating. Do you do that at the restaurant also?
That's how we work with scallops. We get scallops that are alive in the shell. Less than 24 hours out of the water, and right before service, we literally shuck them open. They're alive. They're undulating. We'll remove the scallop, and they're, it's like nothing compared to the typical thing that you would get.
That's not your everyday affair, I would have to say. It's what sets you apart, without a doubt.
Then we'll have to have you come for dinner.
And also, you were talking about making your recipes for the home chef. Well, you didn't even mention your cookbook, your new cookbook, Charlie Trotter Cooks at Home. That's a great way to do it, too, right?
It's, I guess, my way to say this food's approachable. These are dishes that don't require four or five or six sub-recipes. Many of the dishes have no more than six or seven ingredients, and they can be done in 20 minutes.
That's great. It's a really nice book. I have it. Thank you. And I have one last question for you. Is there a difference between burdock and salsify?
Burdock is a little rougher and requires a longer, slower cooking time. It's a little bit more intense of a flavor.
Diane, thank you. Last call is Jerry on the line from Bennington, Indiana.
Hi. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Charlie, great show. I wanted to make sure you knew about Seed Savers organization.
Know all about it.
Okay.
Tell us, Jerry.
Well, they grow seeds that are non-hybrid that go back, some of them, hundreds of years, and they specialize in just old varieties of food, and there are two ways of doing it. You can either buy some of them directly from the catalog, or they also tell you how to contact individual growers to find that grow specialty, so you can do it, either way. I can give you the phone number here. This area code 319-382-5990 for anyone who's interested.
Jerry, got it, and thank you. Charlie Trotter, my last question is simply how you manage your kitchen. You're known as a martinet. What is the combination of beauty, inspiration, religious zeal, and sheer terror that keeps your troops marching?
The only terror I feel, I guess, is the terror or the fear of not exceeding what we did the previous day. And I guess that's all we're interested in, is finding ways every day to go to the next level, not growing complacent, really trying to genuinely pursue excellence. And we live in a day and age where there's a lot of settling for second best or settling for mediocrity. And it's very rare when you can get a collective group of people, in my case 55 staff members, that are all trying to achieve something that is very special.
Charlie Trotter, thank you enormously for joining us on The Connection. Lunch is next. Connection listeners, you can continue the vegetable conversation on our website at theconnection.org. We had help today from Amanda China-Lydon, Carl Volker, Tim Monroe, Darren Manoogian, and Kim Bichari. The Connection is produced by Catherine Bidwell, Sarah Field, Dan First, Hitesh Hatti, Amy McDonald, Jake Shapiro, Keith Shields, and Will Smith. Mary McGrath is our head chef. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and by the Allaire Corporation.
This is WBUR.